Hey everybody, this is the Brothers Wisps number 46. I don't know that we've ever said what this podcast is actually about, not that it actually has a real defined purpose, but we are sort of a network industry kind of focusing on the wireless ISP, or I guess more to the point, the equipment associated with wireless ISPs, right? Because a lot of the MikroTik work we do doesn't necessarily directly pertain to wireless ISPs, but it can be. Anyway, this is episode number 46, as I said earlier, which is amazing still that we've gotten this far along. We are, what is today? May 13th, 2017. Yeah. Today we have me, Greg Soule. I'm out of Texas. We have Thomas Kernek all the way out of Slovakia.
Hello, everyone.
And then we have Mike Hammett out of Chicago.
How's it going?
Doing pretty well. I'm sure they are as well. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening. So, we have a relatively short list. Maybe we have some kind of open-ended speculation we can mumble about for a minute. Let's see. Mike's got the top two listings here. So, of course, as always, I haven't read any of it. So, I'm hurrying up and trying to read through the notes. It's more fun to sort of fly by the seat of the pants and just sort of comment on it with zero knowledge. That's the American way, right? Let's just throw my opinion. This is the internet. It's what it's for. My unbiased opinion based on no foreknowledge. Let's go. See what happens. In the notes, it says tier system for classifying ISPs. So tell us about this.
So this actually was a discussion on Facebook that started today. Justin Wilson's Facebook. He was complaining about one of the upstreams for his client, or for one of his clients. They have fiber cuts constantly. Wind blows anywhere, fibers cut multiple places. So that happened again this morning. And somebody else commented about the, you know, that company being the worst, you know, tier one provider of them all.
Was it level three?
No, it was actually second to level three. They, in terms of his hate. and so then that started a whole discussion on the, you know, tier one, tier two, tier three ISPs. And because I said that that term is meaningless anymore, that, you know, people that are really running the internet aren't, you know, other than their marketing people, you know, they're not talking about tier ones, tier twos. It's just carriers. And, you know, of course, internet argument ensued, taking many hours, many Googlings and composition of my own information. You know, I was, and of course, you know, ended up falling into Nanog's mailing list, which thankfully being the weekend, it hasn't been too rowdy yet. But, you know, his point was that, you know, tier one means that you're not, that, you know, your provider is not purchasing transit from anyone. You know, tier two is, and then some unknown definition for tier three. Which I don't debate that. You know, sure, that's a fine definition for tier one. It's just that nobody cares anymore, because the networks that are tier one aren't as relevant as they were 20 years ago. You know, 20 years ago, the internet was much more hierarchical. You know, you had your UUnets and WorldComs and AT&Ts that, you know, ran the global internet, and then everybody else blocked from them. But in the past 20 years, it's become such a mismatch of stuff. And, you know, I was just trying to prove that it was irrelevant. And so then that, you know, ensued. And, you know, I brought up the point that, you know, I even made a Google Sheet, you know, took the Wikipedia, you know, listing of tier one ISPs, compared them to all kinds of other metrics, other places, to show how irrelevant the list was. And, you know, now that I've professed my view strongly, you know, figured to see what you know, your guys' thoughts are, were on, you know, how important those definitions were, you know, in your life.
I think it's all about perspective, sort of where you're coming from, right? So if I'm looking at it from the data center world, right, which is usually one of my first slants, I sort of think, you know, how do people sort of interface with those companies, or just what's the perception of tier one, two, three, and those different companies from their point of view, right? It's sort of like when you're working with large enterprise and stuff like that, they've never heard of MikroTik, and they don't necessarily want to jump in on a product they've never heard of that doesn't have, like, I don't know, support that costs them 50% the price of the piece of equipment a year, right? So it's I think it comes down to the same thing there, right? So I think I've heard the phrase, you know, nobody ever got fired for buying Cisco, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of comes down to the same sort of thing, right? It's like everybody's heard of level three, right? So theoretically, that's a big tier one, right? I'm doing my air quotes. I know you can't see that. That's a big tier one provider, right? And so people feel safe sort of with that brand recognition, right? What if it's something they've never heard of? There's that perception thing, right? It may not be valid for some people, right? If you're on the kind of the inside of the carrier game and you've been playing it enough, and say you're the kind of cat that runs your own internet exchange, you probably have a little bit different viewpoint than these other people, right? You've been playing in those circles for long enough where you know there is a difference sometimes, and sometimes there's not. To me, kind of the concept of tier one, if I was just going to say, what is a tier one? I would think of the big players, right? That don't pay for transit. There's those symmetrical peering agreements where they just, you know, they peer with everybody else and Bob's your uncle. Except for when it comes to last mile, right? That's when they kind of bite each other. If they're going to give last mile delivery to somebody else, right? They're not on net, but level three does have the fiber there. There's going to be a little bit of payback. You know, they're going to pay a little bit more for that last mile. So I can see that as being tier one. Tier two, that starts to get really blurry to me, and so does tier three, right? So if I'm a data center provider and I do have to buy transit from some people, but I hit it in an internet exchange, does that make me tier two or does that make me tier three? You know, where do those sort of boundaries lie? I'm not sure, you know, and if you're buying solely from a quote unquote tier two, is that what makes you a tier three? I'm assuming that's what it's supposed to be, right?
I'm guessing so. I, you know, lose interest when we get too far down the line in something I think is irrelevant.
Yeah, to me, but your tier level does not denote the quality of experience you're going to get on their networks. Or, you know, all these guys will give you SLAs, and I could not care less about your SLA. I don't care how many nines you're guaranteeing me, because I don't want to pay back, right? An SLA basically says, if I fail, I'll pay you back this amount of money. I absolutely don't care about you paying me back my money. I want you to just not go down. Just don't fail, right? That's what matters to me. Even if I have to pay more and your SLA, you know, pays less, if you just stay up, that's all I care about. I want to be able to sleep at night and not have to get those 3 a.m. calls because your service tanked. And maybe some of this is very directed at level three, but maybe you have a problem at a peering point in Chicago. I really don't care, because I'm all the way in Texas and that should not be affecting me. You should not be eating 20% of my traffic, you know, or say you're level three and you turn up a new 10 gig up to Toronto and somehow that becomes best path for the southeast of the U.S. and then you eat another 30% of my traffic. I really don't care about your payback. I don't care if you pay me back for that entire month or 2 months. That means nothing to me, right? Because I think as a carrier, majority of what you have is your reputation, right? And especially if you're a quote-unquote tier two, right? You're basically known by your reputation. And I think word of mouth is what sells a lot of your services. I think a lot of people in the WISP industry will attest to that, right? You know, it's one person tells another person, and that sort of organic marketing, I guess, if you want to call it, is what really sells your business. And I want to guarantee people, and I do, I look people in the face and I say, you know, when you come and you're buying service from me, that SLA on the contract, you're looking at the guy that signs it, right? I'm the person delivering you that guarantee. It's not some amorphous company of which you will never actually see an engineer or know anybody. It's like, it's me. I am the guy guaranteeing you. I'm the guy promising you that you can sleep at night, because I sometimes can't sleep at night, making sure your stuff stays up. So to me, that's what the tier designations mean. Really very little, but from the outsider's perspective, it, you know, if your core is all Cisco, they're going to feel good. If your core is all Juniper, they're going to feel good. You know, if it's it's something they've heard of and they feel comfortable with, just like those providers, you know, like I have a peer with Talia, and they have been awesome. I have gotten great service from them, but nobody in the U.S. has ever heard of them for whatever reason. You know, your average Joe Schmo at an enterprise, even larger ones, have never heard of them. And so for whatever reason, they feel a little apprehension about that. Sure. Even though they've given me so much better service than any other carrier.
At, and then, you know, meanwhile, Tom's sitting over there, you know, he only has three carriers in his whole country, and tier one, two, three doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm in an entirely different situation where all of this doesn't matter. If I can get, I'm happy enough to get one decent upstream transit, you know, that
Just give me something that works.
Right. Just give me something that, you know, all of the transit providers don't go through one optical junction that when it gets cut, like we had, what was it, half a year ago, then all of the upstreams for the entire region go down.
But, that's insane. Yeah, that's so crazy.
Different level.
Well, that's like here, I think about a year and a half ago, there was like a cut in Arizona or something like that, and it took down most of the state, I think, for an entire day or something like that. Does that sound familiar, Mike?
Yeah. And like, you know, I keep hearing, you know, cuts over, you know, from Justin's neck of the woods too. That's like, there's a cut in Michigan that's affecting, you know, traffic within Indiana. Like, how does that even happen?
Yeah. So it's not like, I mean, we're not perfect angels either over here. You know, it seems crazy.
Sure. But you know, to kind of circle back on a couple of the point, you know, things you touched upon.
Yeah.
You know, level three is one of those, you know, labeled on Wikipedia as a tier one, and is recognized as a tier by, you know, multiple other, you know, resources. So that's somebody where that makes sense. Talia is another one. You know. NTT, you know, those are, you know, big, you know, big companies. You know, most of you probably don't know NTT, you know, NTT or those others, but you know, they're, you know, they're big, you know, big players, tier one, and recognized as being networks that are good. Looking through their kind of list of, you know, tier one providers, you know, you kind of touched on the, you know, last mile thing. Most of these providers on this list, you know, last mile, or, you know, that country's, you know, telecom company. You know, you got, you know, Liberty Global, that's the largest cable company in the world. KPN, that's the incumbent in the Netherlands. Orange, that's France. Telefonica, that's Spain. DT, you know, Germany. AT&T, CenturyLink, you know, those are all the incumbent providers for those areas. So they've got that tier one designation. Now you take that list and you look at the Baker's Dozen list from was Renesas, now it's Dyn, Din, whatever. Then Cisco bought them, so I'm not sure how relevant that list is going to be anymore. And half those providers on that tier one list don't even make their top 13 providers in the world, in terms of, you know, who is using them. Looking at the, I think it's pronounced CADA. It's a nonprofit that's just tasked with just, you know, keeping tabs on the internet. You know, they get money from NSF and some other stuff. You know, half of those providers don't even make their top, you know, 10, 15 networks. But yet you've got someone like Cogent. Now, Cogent has some bad raps for some of their, you know, peering issues, and it's not necessarily undeserved, but it's not quite as bad as people make it out to be. All depending upon which list you're looking at, they're the number two or number three carrier in the world.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of peerings, right? One, like, way up there on the top of peerings.
Yeah, and yet they're not a tier one because they apparently buy some transit from somebody. Yet they're one of the most connected networks in the world. Hurricane Electric, same thing. You know, you got Hurricane Electric that, you know, circumnavigates the globe, you know, multiple, you know, paths, is not a tier one provider, is ranked eighth in both of those, you know, indexes I mentioned earlier. Zayo is a tier one. They only cover the United States, a tiny bit of Canada, and a couple European countries, I think France and England. That's it. That's the only place they have network. They're tier one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where that stuff actually makes sense. And it's kind of like if you're applying for a job and it says you have to have a bachelor's degree or equivalent experience, years of experience, right? So I think it's the same thing, right? Yeah. With like Cogent, maybe they don't have the bachelor's degree, but they've certainly got the years of experience.
Sure.
Right? They're
sure,
big enough and they have enough peerings and they may have as many pains as any of the, I've had problems with all of my carriers, right? There are no angels out there. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, that was my whole thing was the, you know, kind of, you know, that the tier measuring system, while not necessarily correct, because it defines something very clearly, at least for tier one, it's maybe not as relevant as it was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Doesn't mean a lot to me.
So I expect that once Monday comes, Nanog is going to be, I kept telling the guy, you know, this is a dead horse. The operator community has already decided that's the way it is. So I didn't, like, I refuse to bring it up on Nanog. I'm like, I don't want my reputation being dinged by, you know, asking such a silly question. And sure enough, you know, he did it, himself. So, all the responses.
Let the flame war begin.
And so far, all the responses have been, yeah, that's pretty much dead.
But also, I think about in the course of my daily operations or the operations of the world, does this even matter? You know, I think it's like, letting the internet name your research boat, Bodie McBoatface, right? It's just the name of the thing and it doesn't really change. You know what I mean? What's the point?
Sure. Yeah.
It's interesting, though, to think about.
Yeah, like, you know, that's where I would think that, you know, I mean, well, obviously, you know, where you purchase from, you know, if you're in, you know, eyeball ISP, you know, somebody with great peering or you do the peering yourself, to those top content networks, Netflix, Microsoft, Google, you know, so on, you know, because that's where bulk of your traffic is going to go. So, you know, you focus on that one first as an eyeball network, and then if you're smart enough or lucky enough to have proper, you know, traffic flow analysis system, you just look to see where does the rest of my traffic go. You know, if you, you know, because it is going to go to lots of few, you know, certain places, but if you have a predominantly, you know, Asian community that you service, you might want to buy your service, you know, your other up from an Asian carrier, you know, from an NTT or a, you know, PCCW, because chances are they're going to want to communicate with their family better, you know, back home, and who's going to work best, you know, somebody who's incumbent to that area.
I want to say I heard China Telecom is looking to purchase a major data center somewhere in the States, and I think they're looking in the Dallas market right now.
Yeah, I think they've started building some out in California, and, you know, Dallas would make it, you know, go from a location with high chances of natural disaster to, which, you know, pretty much nothing happens there. Just be on the high ground and you'll be okay.
Yeah, Dallas is pretty much the connectivity hub of Texas and a lot of the South, so, as well as financial hub. So it makes a lot of sense. Do you want to beat this one up anymore, or you want to move to the high-frequency trading?
That's probably I played well enough on that one. If you want any more information, guys, since most of the discussion, most information is in Justin's post, and it's, you know, friends only. Chances are you guys probably can't see it. So just ask us what you want to see, and, you know, I'll copy some, you know.
I've also got the link to the Nanog posting that was done, so they should be able to reply to that, right?
Yeah, yeah. So then another one that actually just came up as I was sitting down to my computer. I've done some housework today, sat back down this evening to get ready for this, and saw that someone posted a link to an article about what they call it, a mysterious tower or something like that appears on 31 acres in Chicago. I'm like, that seems like an awfully strange article. So I opened it, and of course I already knew what they were talking about, being near Chicago. And we've touched on this before. Actually, we've had a lot of discussion amongst ourselves. Before the show, you know, Greg's like, you know, what's HFT? Yeah, I was like, well, you know, we've spent hours talking about that before.
Yeah, we've talked about it. Yes, Mike, you were right. I was wrong. Christ. It's there. But it's in public domain. Now people know.
It wasn't just you. It was everybody else that we were talking to. Everybody else that was with us at that mom. I don't know if it was Pittsburgh or where it was, but everybody we were with was like, Mike, you're insane. No matter what I came out with. But
it's usually a safe answer.
So for those that don't know, HFT stands for frequency trading, and it's when a company engages in financial trades at an extremely high rate. You know, they can be buying and selling multiple times the you know, same index, same stock, same commodity, multiple times in a second. And how this has any relevance to us is that about seven to 10 years ago, they started thinking, hey, you know, I could probably do these things. You know, I could make faster decisions, you know, beating my competitors if I have the information as to what's going on somewhere else faster. So that started, you know, better fiber optic routes between Chicago and New York. So that way, when something happened in Chicago, they could sell or purchase in New York before anybody else knew what had happened, and vice versa. And then come 2012 or so, these companies started, they realized that they could do it faster with microwave. And sure enough, they cut about, looks like right now they probably cut about 6 to 7 milliseconds off of the Chicago to New York route by using microwave instead of fiber, because radio waves go through air at about 99% the speed of light, whereas through fiber about 2/3 the speed of light. So it's just a speed of the signal making it there.
Right.
And there's literally been hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars spent connecting those two locations faster and faster. You know, over in Europe, it's, you know, London to Frankfurt to one or two other places. But it's just insane to see the amount of money these people spend, the amount of improvements that they've, you know, repeat and repeat and repeat on their networks to shave, you know, nanoseconds off of their end-to-end latency, to the point that the article that was shared earlier today, you know, at the data center, at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange data center in Aurora, Illinois, which is where, like, the world's largest financial trading engine is, there's a company that recently spent $31 million, twice the market value, for a property across the street from the Mercantile Exchange, just to put up, looking at it, is probably about a 6 to 10 foot tall tower with a microwave dish on it and a little generator sitting next to it. $31 million to buy the land to set up maybe $30,000 worth of equipment, $40,000 worth of equipment.
Nice.
Because it is a couple hundred feet closer than the next closest tower that they could locate on.
That's crazy. I mean, they could put like a hot dog stand on the property, I guess.
At you know, it's just insane. You know, $31 million to buy land to put a little pop-up tower, 10 foot. To, you know, because we're talking 6 milliseconds difference between Chicago and New York. So what's the latency difference from 1,000 feet away? You know, 1,000 feet of difference between microwave and fiber. I mean, is it worth $31-32 million? To me, it's not.
Well, I mean, if your ROI is a year and a half on that investment or whatever, because
you're doing it so much faster.
Yeah. Well, it's like I was talking to Don, the infamous Don, the guy that occasionally shows up to the mum, and he was talking about, I mean, I think the portion of what they do, or all of maybe what they do, is high frequency trading. And he was like an early adopter of 10 gig. But he said they use like 56K of traffic. That's it. But the 10 gig optics could process and transmit information just tiny fractions of a second faster than a regular 1 gig optic could. So they transitioned everything over. I was like, that's crazy. But I guess when time literally equals money, you do it.
Some of these companies... you know, because everyone takes a different approach to figure out how they can lower the latency until someone else discovers it, then they all do it. Because actually, most of the stuff they do is information. It's not something proprietary. It's just something that someone discovered a long time ago and, you know, forgot because it didn't pertain or didn't have usefulness in normal communications. And these guys, hey, well, you know, let's try that thing, you know, 20 years ago that, you know, they were doing, and see if we can get some better latency out of it. And, you know, they do. But this one company, they've contracted with an SFP manufacturer, and they provided custom firmware for the SFP that basically strips out, doesn't do anything that's normal Ethernet at all.
Like no error checking, no anything?
None at all. I mean, like, all the microwave stuff already rips that out of all the normal microwave error checking and stuff just to make it faster. But these guys, you know, I can get a 10 gig SFP from Fiberstore for $36.
Yeah, they're so cheap now.
These guys are spending, it's year two old information now, but they're spending between $8,000 and $12,000 per SFP to get one with their custom firmware on it, that all it does is turns the and off. That's all it does. And they get them with, you know, different wavelengths, and they build kind of their own, you know, WDM PON network. You know, this is what they're doing, you know, within like the New Jersey, New York metro area, amongst all those facilities. They've built their own, you know, PON networks where each machine or you know, each source of information blinks that light on and off at a particular wavelength. And then all the other machines, if they want information from that machine, they listen to that wavelength. There's no switching. There's no routing. There's no MAC addresses. There's no none of that. It's just on and off. Different colors of light.
That's crazy. Like,
it you know, it's crazy. You know, it's so using tools that we use, Ethernet, you know, switches, microwave. Even some of the same vendors. You know, I've talked to some of the vendors of microwave gear that they have completely separate, you know, unlisted HFT lines that have, you know, nothing in common with stuff we buy other than, you know, cases and whatnot. It's interesting stuff.
Absolutely, man. All right. You have any thoughts on this, Thomas?
It's gear that us mortals will never use. So.
Yeah, I'll never see that stuff. It's interesting to, I mean, the theoretics of it, I guess. Let's move on down the list, Mikey. Let's see, what do we got? A note I saw in here. You had a picture of a guy climbing a tower that I think he had like his safety line hooked off to a U-bolt on a radio. And I think the general understanding was remembered to climb safe and smart so that you get to go home at the end of the day. I've climbed a few times and, brother, I white knuckled it and I counted, every step and I tied off and untied very, methodically. So, I don't know. I've seen guys free climb. That freaks me out. Cause, I guess if you don't have wife or kids and nobody gives a damn about you and, nobody depends on you, that's fine. I mean, fine and dandy. But I think if there's any sort of any other human being that you are responsible for, you should take every effort to ensure that you stay alive.
Yeah. There's times when, I may, take a couple shortcuts, it's in, mitigated situations where it's like, I'm not doing something completely retarded. It's just, there's a low likelihood of something else happening. So I'll just, I'll unclip this one before I clip that one, standing on top of a water tower where it's like, you're not going to, if you fall, you just fall onto the roof of the water tower that you're standing on, low risk. But when it's windy, or when it's at least a bit, at least a bit damp, I'm probably not too far from how you were. Just every single thing, you're just very carefully making sure that, okay, this is tight, everything is attached, okay, now let's go back and grab this one, make sure this one's okay, because, some situation, on a tower when it's blowing 40 miles an hour, and, it's raining a little bit, that make everything you do is carefully thought out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's see, moving right along, you said Wispapalooza 2017 registration is now open.
I haven't yet, but everybody go give them your money, go to Las Vegas, see some awesome presentations, get smarter, talk to some awesome people, get even smarter.
When is it going to be? Do you know?
October sometime.
October-ish. All right,
yeah,
cool.
It's always in the first half of October.
All right, let's see. What else? You said Cambium Networks CN Pilot R190. What's that?
I'll hop back real quick. Tomas, you've been coming to a couple American shows. Are you looking at coming to Vegas? Or?
So maybe. We'll see. I would like to. I've never been to Vegas. And, you hear all the crazy things about it.
It's an experience.
We'll see.
So what I'm hearing is people need to buy lots of Unimus licenses so you can afford to come over.
Exactly.
And sell us more Unimus licenses. I try to get that out in front of people all the time. I saw someone talking about, how do I compare, these two parts of a config? I'm like, get Unimus. Like, that's just my default answer anytime someone talks about a config. Get it.
get it. That's right.
So back to that Cambium CN Pilot. CN Pilot is their Wi-Fi line. They've got PMP for their multi-point proprietary stuff, EPMP for their, Wi-Fi based outdoor stuff. But the CN Pilot is there. They've got how they go from, you know, like a home wireless router, you know, up to, you know, enterprise Wi-Fi, something similar to UniFi. And I saw this R190W hit the FCC. Previously, their lowest number was 200 or 201 or something like that. So this must be a new lower cost product. I did see that it's only available in 2.4. So I'm guessing it's just Cambium trying to get out a new, cheaper, less featured, home router for WISPs to use. Nice. It, most of the time they come with PoE injectors built in, so you can pop the radio outside right on, onto it. So, trying to get into the whole, A to Z of, serving your customer.
Very nice. Let's see. Moving right along. I think this is interesting. Microtik has a request for comments for a new flagship router they're planning. And I think they said it'd be able to support up to 100 gigs of throughput. Was that what I saw?
Yeah. That's something that I think is kind of bold of Microtik to ask the internet, what should we do? They're gonna, as you mentioned earlier, Bodie McBoatface, hopefully it's not what they end up with.
Saying they ask the internet if they look fat in these jeans.
I've already made my comment on the thread.
Let's see. What did Norma say on the thread starter? We're working on some future high-speed routers with around 100 gigabits of throughput, and we would like your input on what types of ports you would want to see in such devices. If you imagine a device with around 16 ports, just as an example, how many of them would you want to be, just as an example? SFP Plus, which is going to be 10 gig, SFP 28, which is 25 gig, QSFP, which is going to be 4 10 gig interfaces. He's also saying 10 gig copper management with PoE. That seems weird. Why would you want PoE on that kind of a router? Or would that be like a backup power source for the router itself?
I wasn't PoE sure input? If you meant PoE in or out.
Yeah.
In, I don't know if PoE is enough to power something that, heavy duty.
I don't see out. Why not.
Oh, but you can't PoE power the 1072, can you?
Ah, Lord, I don't know. And I guess it also comes down to if you want higher distance optics, they take more power. So you may not be able to get away with power and that kind of stuff either. I think you were suggesting that they put in some 100 gig interfaces, right? Some that you can actually break out into multiple 25s or some QSFPs that you can break out to multiple 10s.
Sure. Yeah, it is. Okay. If you're saying that the router could do 100 gigabit, let's just start with 100 gigabit interface. You don't necessarily going to move 100 gigabit all. No disclaimer that you can do the full capacity of one port, but it makes cabling a lot easier. Configuration a lot easier if you need to do more than 10 to have a 100 available. 100 has been kind of 140 have been out about 7 years or so now. 40's kind of been passed up a little bit, but 100 is still the flagship interface. But if you have the right interface, if you have a QSFP 28, then you can break that 100 gig out into multiple 25s. So then that gives you flexibility. Mac just has one port, but you could do two different things with it. You could do 100 gig or you could do 25s.
Yeah.
Same with putting just a standard QSFP on there. There you can do a 40 gig or you can do 410s. It lets people mix and match with different infrastructures without having to have a complicated product line.
Yeah, this sounds like a big router. What do you see as use cases for this? I've got a couple in my head, right? People are thinking, wow, 100 gigs of throughput? You know, I'm never going to have that much internet connectivity, right? I'm never going to pull a 100 gig port over to an ISP. But I think it maybe isn't necessarily just for that. I mean, they're talking about 40 gigs and a lot of 10 gigs as well. But right, imagine you have two regions and somehow or another you got dark fiber in between the two. 100 gig between, you know, two major POPs would, I think, fairly well future-proof your infrastructure. You'd be able to do a lot of transport with that, right? So if it's just on your network, 100 gigs between sites would be pretty usable, right? Say you're an MSP or something like that, right? Like Andrew Thrift, I could see them doing some stuff like this.
Yeah, because there's not 100 gigs of internet on, you know, on his island, so it would definitely be for internal data center.
For sure. What about you, Thomas? Is this, I mean, this is a lot of capacity. I'm not sure if this is the kind of thing you run into very often, but
That's again something completely out of our level. Like we've just now started migrating to 10 gig, so our upstream has been 10 gig for a while now, but it's not like we even need for the entire, like, our part of the city that we service. We don't even peak that. We peak somewhere around 2.5 gig at the moment. And so yeah, it's, for us, this is again something that, you know, with our region, with our our situation and our infrastructure, this is just not something we in the foreseeable future would even need.
You know, it's something I just took for granted, but I've never actually asked you. In your neck of the woods, in your region, is it common for upstream carriers to do 95th percentile circuits with bursting?
Yeah, fairly common. Yeah.
Okay. I know that's why
we have a 10 gig upstream, right? Because if we couldn't afford it, of course, don't need a 10 gig upstream, but.
Most of the carriers here, it's kind of a 10% ratio. So if you get a 10 gig circuit, you have to have a commit of at least a gig on that circuit. You know, they won't let you buy 2 megs burstable up to 10 gigs. Is that usually kind of about where it works for you guys?
Yeah, exactly the same. Yeah, you have to have some commit and the 95th percentile, but yeah.
Yeah, usually for us, it's about that 10% ratio, right? So if you buy 500 megs, you got to pay for at least 50 to be able to burst up there. I know there's a couple of carriers that don't do that, like Comcast. If you're buying service from them, it's a dedicated link. They won't let you do bursting, which is bizarre to me. Everybody lets you burst nowadays, except for them and a couple other people.
Here it also depends on who you buy from and what you buy, right? Because you can also get actually like cross-region interconnects and stuff like that.
That's
more like a van service, whereas, you know, so you wouldn't pay that. It's like a burstable thing, but
yeah,
for general upstream, yeah, just get all right, a high line. And
I've never tried to order service in the other side of the world, so I was just curious if you guys did it the same as we do here.
Obviously this has an even, you know, more limited scope than, you know, the 1072. I think there's more people out there, you know, in, you know, the US or, you know, places like that where, you know, where they could use this. You know, they're not doing 100 gig. They're just doing maybe more than 10, or, you know, they want that cushion where, you know, I'm buying a router now, I might be doing more than 10 shortly. Let's just buy this one and call it done.
Yeah, I'm starting to do transport at a couple of sites that I'm upgrading to do 40 gigs, right? So it's a couple of people that want dedicated 10 gig pipes. And so, I don't know, it gets a little sticky. You know, so I have dark fiber going between X and Y, and so I could just do 10 gigs and sort of hope that washes out. But beyond this, I've got multiple other customers coming. So I think 40 gigs, and I've got two 10 gig dedicated customers, and then a couple of handfuls of 1 gig customers. I think it's like a much better sort of ratio, and I don't have to burn a whole lot of individual 10 gigs to do that. So I was looking at something recently that I learned that I wish I don't know. It kind of made me feel stupid that I didn't know it. I don't know why. I'd never really researched this stuff before. But with QSFPs, and I know there's different flavors of them, but just the QSFP as well, I was looking at, they come in kind of two varieties. One is you use like an MPO connector where it's, you know, a lot of fibers built into a single connector. And so they actually use 8 fibers to go between QSFPs, right? So it's breaking out the individual, you know, it's 4 pairs of 10 gig interfaces. Or you could use a specialized one that just used a single LC. And when you do that, it's actually using wave division multiplex. So it's sending, I mean, it's emulating those 4, but it's just sending them on all on different frequencies. So you can still use a single cable. I thought that was super smart, very clever.
Yeah, it's, and the difficult thing with them is that they there's not a lot of, well, there's none, you know, just put, one test case where they offer those in CWDM flavors, such as, you know, being able to choose which wavelengths you have. So you can't take a 40 channel, you know, WDM mux and put 10 of them on it and send over 40 wavelengths, because nobody makes an optic where you can choose the wavelength at 40 gig or 100 gig, with things we can afford. You get a, you know, Sienna system or someone like that, and, you know, you can do whatever you want. They'll combine multiple smaller channels into a single, 500 gig wave and just shoot that over. That's not stuff we can afford.
I think the QSFPs, like those LC QSFPs, I think they were, I know I looked it up not too long ago, they were sub $400. So really affordable.
Yeah.
And that's Fiber Store with like 2-day shipping, which is crazy. That they're stocking so much stuff now over here in the States. You can get it a couple days, free shipping. Booyah.
Actually, I don't know if I touched on this the last show or not. But,
you did.
Okay, well, then I'm not going to do it.
No, it's just, it still, like, surprises me.
AMZIC's worked with Finisar to kind of make one. I don't think they ended up using it. Where it would do, I think it was 100 gig, CWDM style. I think they ended up just, buying one of those, Sienna big boy boxes and calling it a day.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, do you have any final thoughts on the, so it is a forum post, so everybody be sure to go and put in your 2 cents if you're looking for some high throughput. Anybody have any final thoughts on that?
No, they're good.
I'm just interested what comes out of it. The super mythical, unspecified device.
And kind of proc it's going to have and all that stuff. I'm sure Andrew Thrift is chomping at the bit to put in his 2 cents. I don't know why he's not a hardware engineer. He needs to release those demons.
Yeah, true. We just talked about the interfaces, which is all they asked about. But the more important thing is, what's the CPU behind it going to be? Is it going to be a CPU that can, has some decent, per core performance? Yeah. Or is it?
And all the grumblings I've been hearing is for a long time now is that Tyler is dead, right? Isn't it? Hasn't it been purchased by somebody else and they've kind of shuttered it?
It's been purchased, just like we talked about it as well in one of the previous casts. But
so
it's been purchased, I think, multiple times and then deprecated, and support is no longer offered.
Yeah, not that it was apparently particularly great to begin with, but
actually,
that means they're going to have to...
At its time, it was a very good good technology with very good potential. It's just that, as it happens, the technology didn't stand to the test of time.
So they gambled and it didn't pay off.
At its time, it was very interesting. It had very good feature set. It had very good future proofing. You cannot blame Microtik at that particular point in time that they chose Tylera, because then, you had other options, of course, but
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You don't know what will happen in 3, 4, 5 years' time.
For sure. For sure. Well, I had heard some rumblings. And again, all of this is secondhand, so what do I know? But they were saying that that Microtik may have been surprised at how difficult it was to program with the Tyleris, to work with the Tyleris. You know, so I think supposedly that slowed down maybe some of the early development or something like that. I don't know. This is secondhand and it's old news, so who knows?
At the moment, you can reach that assumption just by looking at, you know, the, you know, release timeline of, you know, how many releases they've made, what amount of time, and, you know, what features that they've done, you know, how many of them were, you know, to fix this problem, and they just keep multiple versions are fixing the same problem because they can't, you know, it's difficult.
True story.
You know, the question always is how much of that is due to Tyleris and, you know, how much of that is just a native code that you just recompile for a different architecture.
Sure. True story. All right. Well, go in there and put your 2 cents in, peeps. Because they're always asking for feedback, right? Send it to support. Now, here's your opportunity. Let's see. A couple other Microtik things. The Hap Mini, which is an even smaller version. You saw these in person, right, Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
They're super duper tiny, right?
Actually, I haven't saw the Mini in person, but
Okay. Yeah,
it's extremely tiny.
Yeah, it's sub $20. The only thing I'm disappointed on is that it's only got 3 interfaces. I liked the Hap Lite that it had at least 4. I'll always take as many as I can. With 4 interfaces, I could do a lot of different things. With 3, it kind of gets a little bit more difficult for me occasionally. But I don't know. They're super cute. 2 gig radio in there. Who knows? I'll probably get one to play with, or keep in my bag at least.
Now you have the full decisions. You can get the 1-port device with the map light and the map 2 ports. You know, have been 3 ports, have 4 ports, and on we go.
Yeah, I'll keep getting the Hap Lites. The only thing I don't like about the Hap Lites now is the new case design with the swoop at the bottom. I hate the swoop because if you try and put it horizontally, it looks ridiculous because it's, you know,
actually,
it's obviously not made for that.
It will be the same issue with the Hap Mini. I don't think it will be only standing. I don't think you will be able to put it down horizontally either. At least from the pictures, it seems like it was a stand-only device.
Fair enough.
I might be mistaken.
Well, I think the stand looked like it might be detachable. I mean, it's a different plastic. It doesn't mean it's not, you know, bound to the case in somehow, some form or fashion. Who knows? I don't think it's going to be a deal breaker one way or the other.
Tangent, I've just been playing on Runnerboard.com, and they do not have a 6-port. You can get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7. They don't...
So we super glue a map to the top and just put the ports together. There you
go. Oh, conspiracy theory. A 6-port device announced at the US MOM.
Nice. They don't have a 9-port device either, it looks like. So 6-port and 9-port.
Oh, man.
Get on it.
That's a huge market hole they've been missing for years.
You heard it here first. That's the new device is announced at the US MOM.
All right. So Mike also put up that the RB1100 AHX4, which is the continued version of the 1100, is going to be somewhere around the $350 MSRP range, which, I mean, that's the same as the old 1100s, right?
Yeah. Yep, same MSRP. That one's the Dude Edition. So the one that's not the Dude Edition should be cheaper because there's no SSD in it. There's no... There's a couple other things. I don't remember what they were.
There's no useless stuff in it.
There's no non-router stuff, is that what you mean? All right, fair enough. And then the PowerBox Pro is gonna be about $100, and that's kind of like a outdoor 5-port. Does it have PoE? It has PoE, right?
I'm assuming with power. I assume it's
yeah. All right, so just kind of some ballpark ideas on how much this stuff's gonna cost. Now to the fun part. This is the last cast before the US MUM. It's coming up in a couple weeks. Well, actually less than a couple weeks at this point. So what are your MUM speculations? I'm going to go ahead and say that somebody said that due to the high volume of hardware release, at the EU MOM, they are anticipating a software announcement at this one, and I'm sure everybody knows what we're talking about, version 7.
I was going to say 6.40.
6.40. So who knows? That's what some other, I don't know if they want to be named or not, but that's what somebody was saying. I don't know, man. They've released so much. I just don't know what they would have left up their sleeve, honestly, to announce. I can't even begin to think of anything other than saying version 7 could theoretically be announced.
They're going to make as much noise about the hardware at the US MOM as they did at the EU MOM, because, when they have those sorts of things, every MOM that they go to, then it's, new products, and it's, the same stuff they've been saying for 4 months, but
same new products.
It's new since, it's new since the last time you were there. So, I can't imagine they'll have anything new for hardware. I mean, they announced, 21, 22 products, something like that.
That's crazy. What was the free router at the EU MOM, Thomas?
It was a cap, the cap light.
Okay. All right. Well, what are your speculations, Thomas? Or do you even care to venture a speculation?
I've abandoned hope for speculating V7. We've been speculating this for years, like every year. It used to be EU MOM hardware, US MOM software, but I've abandoned hope for that as well. They just announce whatever they feel like at whatever MOM they feel like.
For sure.
At least that's how it's been for the last couple of years. So, version 7, while I wish, I don't even want to get my hopes up. So I don't think it will happen. And 6.40, maybe. There's been some new stuff that's coming in 6.40, which I still don't think it's been announced publicly. I don't know.
Just the RC, I guess.
There's been some whispers for changes that will happen in 6.40 that are quite major. So maybe those will get announced. And I don't know. We'll see.
You think they'll drop 6.40 the day before the MOM or something like that?
I don't think so. Definitely not. But I at least hope for some screenshots of the new features in 6.40 that should be coming, that we've heard through some back channels about. And so, I hope maybe we even get to play with it on some devices at the demo presentation table of Nycritic. That would be nice. Maybe they will want to collect some feedback on that new stuff. And we'll see. But V7, I don't think so.
All right. Well, while we're talking about the MOM, excuse me, I'm going to be there Wednesday and I'm flying out on Sunday. I think Miller's going to be roughly that same time frame. JJ's going to be there before we get there, and he's going to stay after. He's turning into a vacation. How long are you going to be there, Thomas?
I'm arriving on Wednesday and leaving on Saturday morning.
Okay. All right. Thomas is going to be there for a little minute. I don't know about anybody else. I did say Miller's going to be roughly the same schedule as me, right? I think he's working this morning. All right, so anybody that's interested in popping by and saying hi to us, I'm sure we'll be at the meet and greet. And honestly, that's where I've met half of you guys, I think. Although, no, I met Thomas at lunch, I think. That's where I met him. But I met Alex at the meet and greet. I have no idea what his schedule is going to be like, but he'll be there. So definitely try and grab us. I'm sure we're going to eat meals at some point, probably lunch at the MOM, but dinner we're going to be, we'll sort it and try and all carpool together and head someplace. So definitely be cool to meet as many of you people as possible. Honestly, that's the only reason I go, to see people and meet people and do my thing on the catwalk. So definitely come out and see us. Something else, a bit of housekeeping in here, is we've been sort of lamenting the fact that not everybody can afford to go to everything, right? It's the nature of the beast. Not everybody can go to Wispapalooza, not everybody can go to MOM. We haven't had everybody together in ages. So we've been thinking about, can we get sponsorship? And if we can't get the big boys to sponsors, maybe we can get the little man to pitch in and kind of make it a reality for all of us. So we've been kicking around the idea of Patreon, right? Patreon's a service where we create a Patreon account, and for every video we upload, which guess what? It's going to be about 2 a month. That's our average, right? You can donate X amount of money to us, right? The idea is all that's going to go into a pool, and it's going to pay for either audio equipment or helping subsidize costs to make it to these shows so we can actually see you guys. I don't really think it would be enough to put in our pockets. I think we would still be footing the bill for some of this stuff. Like, I know the hotel room, I think a lot of us are bunking together to try and make this stuff happen, right? So we're trying to get out there, trying to see the stuff, trying to do the things. And let us know if you guys are interested in, I mean, would there be interest in supporting us on Patreon? I've used it before. There's a couple of content providers, or rather producers, that I really enjoy. And, you know, I feel like they're part of my entertainment. They've been part of my, you know, because I don't buy cable anymore. I'm one of those wretched cable cutters, right? So I feel okay putting a little of that money towards the people who actually produce things that I like and enjoy. So sure. If you like or enjoy or find any use out of this stuff, or want to or like to see us at shows, you know, would you be interested in supporting us in some way? Do you guys have...
Go ahead. I would say that's the nice diplomatic way of saying that. What I would have said is, I talk shit about the manufacturers, and so they won't give us money. So you instead.
That's one of the problems about completely being transparent about you know, how we feel about a product, or if you ask us to review a thing, I want to be as fair and as honest as possible. I try and be very politically correct. I think you guys have noticed. I try not to crap on anybody too bad, but.
Yeah, you know, I think that's why we appointed you to be the guy at the you know, mum panel. That's, you know, keeping everybody in line.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So yeah, I'm going to be mediating the mum panel, very first one. So any of you guys that have questions, comments, pop that stuff out. We're building a list. We actually have a page in our Google Doc where we're trying to put some content together. So in case we hit some lulls or nobody's brave enough to ask us any questions, we have some stuff to go based on. I don't think we'll have too big a problem. We've got an hour though, so we might have to do a lot of vamping in there. And also, I meant to ask this earlier, but I was thinking a good idea for us would be to have like a tablet PC, one you can draw on the screen. So if we wanted to quickly draw some diagrams while we're talking to things, that would be great. I don't have one. I don't know if anybody else does.
I've got you covered.
Sweet action. Thomas is the man. There we go. I was thinking it may or may not come in, but I am super visual, so just somebody talking at me may not exactly make sense. So I was thinking it'd be good if we could kind of scribble things out. Yeah, yeah. Apparently, cows think that way too, so I don't know what that says about me, but apparently I'm very bovine. I don't know. Do you guys have anything else before we wrap up?
There was another... I have my list. Did you mean to miss, to skip over that, or?
No, we hit the hour mark. You want to squeeze it in now?
Yeah, sure.
All right. What do you got? It's Class A transfers /8 of IPv4. Fill us in. Yeah. What's the dirty on that?
At basically, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, secondary market, IP block transfers in North America and in Europe now, because they ran out. So you got buying from people that had them, and one of the organizations that does a lot of that IPv4 market. So I don't remember what that, their name is right now, but somebody kind of evaluated where, since it's all public record, where the blocks are coming from, where the blocks are going, and they actually came up with some interesting observations about the organizations, you know, that are moving these blocks, and then they also went through the you know, list of the legacy /8 networks you know, excluding, you know, governments that aren't going to give them up and things like that. Kind of evaluate how much of their IP blocks they've, you know, sold off so far. And actually, there's a couple of them that have sold all or most of, you know, their legacy slash 8 block. They've, you know, completely cashed out something that was, well, free to them in the first place.
It was a good investment.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Squat on it.
Yeah, the, you know, spend nothing, get, was, you know, 16 IP addresses, and then, you know, sell them all for $10 a piece. That's not a bad investment.
Yeah, but, I just recently helped a public organization go through the process of getting pre-approval at Aaron and then contacting a brokerage house and all that stuff. And it's not necessarily a difficult process. You just kind of have to know your way around it. I was thinking about doing a blog post. That'd probably be something decent to help the peeps out.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, keep complaining about not doing anything on your blog, so, you know.
I know. Some... Well, hell, man, I'm doing other stuff. I'm doing stuff that pays me. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, yeah, I could see where that would be. Detrimental to your, let's just ramble about things.
Why would that get priority, though?
I don't know. Talk to the NetXMS guys. all right. That's interesting. See kind of where it's moving and all that stuff. It's definitely kind of a, I think, a closed system to most people. I don't know. It's interesting. I think they need to open up the experimental range and start handing that out.
I think could we all just leave the zombie of IPv4 behind finally after all these years of talking about, you know, IPv6. Let's just do it. Please.
I say, you know what, that's a fair point. I think all of Europe and Asia and Africa can give up their V4 and give it back to the US, and we'll just keep it and do our own V4 thing, and you guys can all do the V6 thing. We'll call it a day. We got to build that wall, build that internet wall around our IPv4 addressing. Just like Trump wants to.
You know, I've seen quite a few discussions on, you know, opening up experimental ranges, opening up, you know, these other hash 8s and 16s and things that, you know, are not, you know, able to be used in the public internet. And, you know, what it usually boils down to is nothing has, or very little has, support for those addresses now. So, like, it's a valid IP address, but it was never, like, it was assumed to be something that you couldn't use. You know, how many, you know, firewalls out there are just blocking these ranges because they're not usable IPs. So the hurdle of overcoming that, of getting these IP blocks opened up on firewalls and, you know, make sure it works on, you know,
consistently everywhere,
random devices, is probably higher than actually getting everybody who's not on V6 to become on V6. Because whatever's stopping them from V6 is the same, you know, they'll have to do the same thing to get these V4 addresses.
Fair enough. All right. You guys have anything else? You ready to put a bow on it?
Now that I've burst your bubble, I'm okay with wrapping it up.
No, we're right around that 1 hour mark. That's usually the point at which people have fallen asleep. Let's see. So wrapping things up, let's do a little housekeeping. Thomas Kernack, if people want to find you and your amazing backup software, Unimus, where can they do that?
Yeah, unimus.net. And if you want me, just Google for me. I'm fairly easy to find.
Oh, I want you, Thomas.
All right. Just 2 more weeks. Just 2 more weeks.
Counting the hours down.
And I'm all on all the major social platforms. So if you
whether
want to
he
find
wants
me,
to or not,
I don't have a choice. So if you want to find me, I'm pretty sure you will be able to find me.
Excellent.
For better or worse, that is, you know.
Yeah, all right. You know, once you start catering to the public, you've going to be available to the public.
That's right. You got
to
give the people what they want, Thomas. Shirtless pictures of you riding on horseback.
Drinking
soda canned
beer.
Is that what that is? I'm trying to think of some of the other things. What do you have to find? Some lost treasures that you dove down and got yourself. I'm trying to think of the pictures Putin is putting out. anything other dictator related images is definitely what the people want. Mikey, if people want to find you out on the interwebs, how do they do that?
I was going to say carefully, but you don't have to be that careful. You'll stumble across you whether you want to or not.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
I mean, most all social media platforms, any mailing list that's out there that's related to ISPs, I'm probably on it. You can probably scrape my email address from there. Google. Yeah, I'm out there.
Definitely the easiest way to get him is facebook.com/thebrotherswisp. So he is the keeper of the Facebook page, all of that wonderful content that gets constantly updated, and basically all of the notes we build on here. Occasionally, one of the other of us will throw in a tidbit here and there, but not very often. So the guy that's always constantly interacting with you, immediately responding, staying on top of things, that's Mike. So be sure to, I was going to say like and subscribe, but but I don't know how many people watch us on YouTube. But definitely follow us on Facebook if you want to get a hold of Mike. So any messages that pop in, that's definitely going to him.
Yeah. And people do that. We got a message just 2 days ago saying, "Hey, Mike, I'm looking for a dinner near Chicago." And no, I'm working with a guy to, you know, find him a home.
Booyah. Nicely done. Yeah, you know, it's funny. We have a fairly wide-reaching network. I was at a convention not too long ago, and somebody was looking for an incumbent to either grow in their area or pull in their area. And I was like, "Well, you know, what's your population? How scattered out are you?" He's like, "We're about 400 people over this gigantic area." It's like, yeah, the only thing you're going to get out there is a wisp, and you need to find somebody solid. And I was actually able to pair them with a reliable, right? There's nothing worse than a bad wisp, right? So we probably have a decent portfolio, different recent, rather Rolodex of quality people you could work with. So reach out to us if you're looking for something in your area. What else? You can find me at gregsoul.com, where I never blog anymore, but occasionally we'll pop in and do things. You can try and find me on Facebook, but I've somewhat given that up. It was very distracting, and I've got a lot of hairy stuff going right now, so I've sort of given that up for a minute.
Just not on your head, right?
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, it falls off and sticks everywhere else. It's like a stripe down the back. It's my racing stripe. Makes me fast. What else? Again, you can email us at contactus@thebrotherswisp.com if you're old school and you got to do the email thing, and I will occasionally check that. You can find us on Facebook, and Mike will immediately respond to you. I'm going to point to Mike in my little picture thing there. Again, come and say hi to us at the MUM, shake our hands, buy Thomas and the rest of the guys beer. I'll sit there with my Coke and a smile. I guess keep listening, give us questions, comments, any of that good stuff. Give us some fodder for the routing panel we're going to do at the MUM coming up. And if nothing else, thanks, everybody.
See you.